shreds. Raimel Taxis's great sword dropped like a thunderbolt, dividing the man that Nona had tripped over. She rolled clear as the blade hammered into the rock. Her speed was leaving her now, spent in too many acts of extravagant swiftness. Raimel straightened, scything his sword across the slope. Nona tried to dig into the moment, but the gaps had grown slim, and the spaces between heartbeats, once so cavernous, now squeezed her out. She leapt the cutting edge with just an inch to spare. Where Nona was tiring, Raimel seemed possessed of boundless stamina, howling a chilling mix of glee and hatred as he pursued her. Nona grabbed a discarded sword and, running beneath another swing, hacked at Raimel's leg. It was like hewing a stone pillar. The sword jolted from her hands, and the shock transmitted along the blade sent white agonies lancing up her wrists. The gleaming arc of Raimel's next swing held Nona's attention, and a kick caught her a glancing blow, coming from the side while she watched the sword. The impact spun her, and she fell among the bodies, clutching the hot, wet pain in her side, broken ribs at the least. "You're going to wish you hadn't done that," she snarled at him. "But not for very long." She tried to leap up at him, furious, but for once her body betrayed her, too broken and filled with too much hurt to obey. Raimel towered above her, lifting his foot to stamp down on her legs. Nona raised her arm in futile defense, and as she did, something small and spinning tore through the empty space above her. It vanished through the gap she had made in Raimel's visor and thunked into his eye. With mad screams, Darla, Ruli, and Jula came tearing down the slope, whirling stolen swords above their heads. Raimel, howling, dropped his own blade and raised a huge hand to his face. The three novices thrust and hacked at every part of him, from his ankles to his chest. Nona crawled clear of the melee, sliding down the gore-slick slope, holding her ribs. Raimel weathered the sword storm. He spun around amid the clatter and clang, swinging his left arm. Darla took the main force, his forearm slamming into her belly and lifting her off the ground. She landed yards away with a horrifying thump. Ruli and Jula, both knocked from their feet, tumbled down towards Nona. Iron-shod fingertips closed on the point of the throwing star and pulled it from the ruin of Raimel's eye. He flipped the weapon away. Behind the intact section of visor, the scarlet eye devil-owned stared at the sprawl of novices, the hatred so intense that it seemed a physical thing, pressing on them, both burning and icy at the same time. Nona seized a spear and rolled to her back. She would die facing her enemy, weapon in hand, not crawling away. Close by, Ruli lay dazed, her head bloody. Jula rolled over beside Ruli, her wrist at a sick-making angle, and took her knife in her off hand, eyes blazing. And Raimel stood over them, all in shadow now with the setting of the sun, his huge sword recovered and poised to end three of them in a single slash. From the darker shadow of the cave mouth, a small figure broke, tottering and awkward on stiff legs. Arabella Jotsis, her golden hair in disarray, staggered weaponless down the slope towards them. Nona wanted to scream at her to run, but it was too late. Too late for anything. At least Ara might die with them, in a bloody moment, and escape Raimel's cruelties. Some warrior instinct, perhaps just sharp hearing, made Raimel glance back. But seeing a stumbling child, he quickly returned his attention to the victims before him. Ara tripped and fell most of the last few yards, jerking her arms overhead only at the last moment. And in that moment, Nona recognized the power of the path shuddering there in Ara's empty palms. Ara clapped both to the giant's backplate, and the energy she had gathered, finding her serenity in the worst possible situation, pulsed into Raimel Taxis. The raw stuff of creation detonated against Raymel, as it had once detonated in the fight dummy that had suffered Ara's wrath in place of Zol. A light lit within Raymel's armor, and with a violent and deafening crack, things blew apart. Nona shook the echoes from her head and looked up to find that although Ara had been blown off her feet, Raymel had not. He stood in the fractured remains of his plate armor, 500 pounds of bleeding muscle stacked 3 yards tall. The livid purple mark that reached up the side of his neck continued down across the broadness of his chest, swirling out into patterns that remembered the complexity and form of sigils. On his side and below his shoulder, great patches of scarlet scar tissue, as if from old burns, seemed to hold leering faces in their ridges and hollows. Flying pieces of his armor had torn the odd furrow through his flesh, but, by and large, he stood unharmed. The force of the detonation had blown his helm clear, and he stared at her, with one eye ruined and dripping, the other a scarlet window into the mind of a devil. Below them hung an echo of the smile he'd worn when he broke Sida. In that moment, the warrior in Nona roared again, finding a last touch of speed, a last gasp of strength. She threw the spear she'd been clinging to. It hit hard enough to bury a couple of inches of the blade between Raymel's ribs, enough to keep it there, standing proud. Rising with the throw, Nona tumbled between Raymel's legs, plucking a discarded knife from the ground between them and slashing at the back of his knee, where the armor plate hung on one rivet, exposing flesh. She cut deep, slicing tendon and muscle. Unbalanced, Raymel fell with a roar. Ruli and Jula scrambled clear with no time to spare as he fell, crashing between them. The head of Nona's spear erupted from Raymel's back as the butt of the haft hit the ground when he fell, arms out to take the impact. Nona scrambled up Raymel's pale and naked back as the huge man surged to hands and knees with a muted roar. She plunged the knife between his shoulders, again and again. The devils beneath his skin screamed and surged, strange and alien forms moving beneath his flesh. Nona sliced at them, like serpents beneath a rug. The blood that spurted from those wounds came scalding and stinking, staining her hands, filling her with a black agony beyond comprehension. But her rage proved larger than any hurt, and still the steel in her fist rose and fell. Nona rode her enemy, her howls a counterpoint to his bellows. And still, despite the ruin of his back, Raymel turned and rolled, reaching for Nona, the spear through his belly snapping against the ground. She scrabbled away on her back, but one huge hand closed around her leg below the knee. No! Nona drove her dagger through his wrist, fear warring with her anger now. Die!
I can't die!
He kept his grip, spitting blood, and drew her towards him.
They won't let me!
His red eye met her black ones, and she knew, in that moment, that no wound would stop him.
I can't die!
In the last heartbeat remaining to her, Nona spotted Yisht's amulet, gleaming blackly between two rocks almost within reach. She lunged for it, arms out before her. But for the blood, she would never have made it. Raymel's gore-slick hand slipped down her leg from knee to ankle, and with the tips of her fingers she snagged the iron sigil.
I can't die!
Raymel loomed above her on all fours. Nona sat up and pressed the black sigil to his forehead with her thumb.
Yes, you can!
Her other hand pulled the knife from his wrist and drove it up beneath his chin, hilt deep. Raymel roared. Nona saw the blade gleaming behind his teeth. The sigil of negation seared into his forehead, corroding, falling apart, a red mist rising around it, and with a chorus of screams the devils fled his flesh. The grip on her ankle slackened, and Nona rolled clear, twisting her knee as she yanked her leg free. Behind her, Raymel Taxus collapsed, twitching to the ground, arms sprawled, the rocks about him drenched with crimson. Epilogue. It is important when killing a nun to ensure that you bring an army of sufficient bravery. For when Sister Cage of the Sweet Mercy Convent steps onto the battlefield, courage is often found to be in short supply. She came from the Undercaves, and the Rock of Faith shuddered to its base as if deep in the blindness of its roots, the rock itself had given birth to her. She rose amid the convent buildings, behind a great dome of the ancestor. The youngest of the novices were still within their dormitory, a single ancient nun seated at the door. They watched at their windows, open-mouthed. Years ago, before some of these girls were brought wet and screaming into the world, a different set of novices had watched Sister Cage first arrive at Sweet Mercy. There is little of that child to be seen in Sister Cage. She stands shadowless in the torch-ringed courtyard, and in one moment the novices know that the stories are true. She glances their way, each eye utterly black, as if that missing shadow had been poured into both until it filled her skull. A distant scream rings out past the dome of the ancestor deep among the pillars. Sister Cage turns her head. She is deadly pale, strange in her beauty, her hair jet and jagged, cut close. Her habit is faded, stained, trailing ragged tails of cloth, but it is still red, and as she runs she looks like death descending from some high place. The Pilarthi stood between the pillars, a loose halo around the place where Sister Thorn lay in her blood. Clara Gomel stood above the fallen nun that once and long ago she had in this place called friend. It seemed that the world revolved about them, the pillars spinning about the axis that stood between Thorn and Clara, as all the stars in heaven revolve around a single point of darkness. Clara Gomel opened her mouth to speak, and said nothing. For the years rob us of the words for such moments, making each truth too bitter for the tongue, too heavy to be spoken. She stood among strangers, before the body of a sister. Sister Cage drew her sword as she ran towards the first of the Pilarthi. Sister Tallow had pressed the weapon's hilt back into her hand less than an hour before. A long blade, thin, carrying a slight curve, its edge cruel enough to cut silence and make it scream. She didn't seek the path, uttered no battle cry, made no challenge. She spun through a group of six, and the clash of her sword upon the metal collar of the last of their number announced her arrival. Sister Cage stopped, head down, sword trailing at her side, a crimson line stretching out across the rock from its point. Before her, dozens of mercenaries turned their heads to see what threat faced them, and behind her, six bodies collapsed to the stone. Some not yet realizing they were dead, for death had come among them so swiftly. Out in the convent compound, Bittell rang out. Where Sister Thorn offered protection, Sister Cage offered only war, utter, and without quarter. The years when they had called her the shield were long past. Sweet Mercy would open her doors. Everyone who drew breath within its walls would issue forth, from youngest novice to ancient nun. Sister Cage lifted her face to her enemies, night-eyed, a narrow beauty among the scars, half a smile that promised her to be more than a little in love with death, and invited them to dance. Bows creaked among the Pilarthi ranks, spears were lifted, knuckles whitened on the hilts of sword and axe. A hawk-eyed archer, her cheek torn and bloody where Thorn's throwing star had sliced past, took aim at the new nun's face. They knew her by many names, the Pilarthi did, but Cage held as much fear as any other. Cage, she would not release you. You would not escape. The tales said she made her first kill in the same year she learned to walk. They said she tore a boy apart with her bare hands and took his heart to show her mother. Sister Cage found the torn-faced archer among the crowded strength of the Pilarthi, and a knowing passed between them, between the archer's cold gray eyes and the sister's black orbs. The arrow fell with a clatter. The archer turned without a word and began to push her way back past the warriors of her clan. To her left, another turned, a man thick with muscle, the names of his forefathers inked in runes along his arms. Two of those he pushed aside turned and ran with him. A trickle became a flood. The Pilarthi left the scores of their dead still scattered or heaped where Sister Thorn had killed them. They ran, pursued by a terror they couldn't name, something larger than the sister who'd stood behind them, but perhaps as small as the disappointment in her eyes when they turned to flee. Clara waited beside Ara as Nona strode towards them through the pillars. In the heavens above, the first crimson stars dared open their eyes. "Is she dead?" "How are you here?" Clara ignored the question. "You weren't supposed to be here. How did you know? And even then, how did you get here?" "Is she dead?" Nona rushed forward, pushing Clara back, away from Ara, who was still coiled about the spear. She knelt, reaching out to touch the spread gold of her hair. "Ara!" "You should never have let me go." The words sputtered from Clara as if she were hurt, as if it were her wrapped around a spear. "You had me bound. Guilty. You should have let them drown me." "I wouldn't do that to a friend." Nona set her fingers to Ara's neck, seeking a pulse, the smallest of groans, the smallest tremble of a hand. A short laugh burst from Clara, sounding as much like pain as mirth. "They all think you're the big bad, the church's hammer, Cage the shadowless. You're still a child, Nona. You run into everything heart first, expecting what? You didn't understand how people work when the abbess brought you here, a dirty-footed peasant. You didn't understand when she sent you away, and you don't understand now. People lie, Nona. They steal, they cheat, they're unfaithful. People hurt you, they let you down, they sell you out. It doesn't mean I have to be like that." Nona stared up at Clara, who flinched, guilty before those black eyes. "We have a whole church built on ancestors." She waved an arm at the dome. "Family, dead family." She took Ara's hand in hers. "You choose your friends. If you're going to worship dead people you didn't choose, then perhaps the bonds of friendship shouldn't be so easily broken. No?" Clara shook her head. "You're a fool, Nona Gray. Are you going to kill me now, or let someone else do it?" "Ara could live. If we get her to Sister Rose, now." Nona glanced back towards the convent. They were coming. The old sisters and the young girls. Sister Thorn had vowed to protect them, Sister Cage to fight alongside them. Clara waved her hand at the distant nuns, exasperated. "Let them take her. I don't care. I didn't come for Ara. She was just in the way." Nona released Ara's hand with a squeeze and stood. "I've missed you, Clara. It's been too many years." Clara glanced out across the plateau. "We were children, Nona. Children make and break friendships all the time. It's not important. This, what we're doing now, this is important. It's about sides in the great game that's being played, and you're on the wrong one, the losing one. You should change sides." Nona shook her head. I'm not playing, and I've always been on your side, Clara. You've just not properly understood it. Clara looked down at Ara.
I wanted her to run.
I know.
She should have run. There were too many of them for her. Why does she have to be so stupid?
Nona shrugged.
Where is Lanotaxis?
You know the Taxis.
Clara nodded towards the plateau stretching out beyond the pillars.
They like to let you spend your power against people they consider expendable, then arrive to finish the job if anything's left to finish.
They do.
He's out there with his soldiers, an Aetnoi Guin, his teachers from the Tetragode, others too.
Nona looked down at her sword.
My power's not spent.
You think you can kill me without reaching for the path, little Nona?
Clara drew her sword, a twin to Nona's, taken from the body of a red sister. Nona turned away, her back to Clara, looking out across the plateau.
I think I won't need to kill you,
Nona said.
I think you'll fight them with me, sister.
The End. This book was read for you by Heather O'Neill, a member of SAG-AFTRA. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Red Sister, First Book of the Ancestor by Mark Lawrence. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.